welcome to a special episode of The Projection Booth. This is your old friend Mike White, bringing you a special interview with the author Tom Rosten with a book called I Lost It at the Video Store. Let's see, the official name is I Lost It at the Video Store, A Filmmaker's Oral History of a Vanished Era, which tells the tale of many famous and infamous directors and other celebs who worked at or visited video stores. Some great stories in this book. I had the pleasure of speaking to Mr. Rosten recently, and it's a quick interview, but I think it's a lot of fun, so I hope folks enjoy what he had to say, and please definitely check out the book. It is not one to be missed.
My name's Tom Rosten. I'm a journalist. I'm based in New York, and I write about film for different outlets, such as the New York Times and the Guardian. For about the past 10 years, I've been focusing a lot on writing about documentary film. But before that, for 10 years, I was a senior editor at Premiere Magazine, which was a great movie magazine.
How did you get into writing about film?
I've always love movies. I've always been a movie fan. I wouldn't say that I grew up as a cinephile, but basically I was a journalist writing about stuff and different cultural products in different ways. I got a job at Premiere and I was like, oh, this is great because it allowed me to focus on something. And I got to tell you, those 10 years were fantastic. It was a lot of fun watching, you know, more than 100 movies a year and writing about them.
So how did I Lost It at the Video Store come about for you?
If you recall, in 2013, Blockbuster pretty much closed all its outlets, you know, after going bankrupt. And it struck me that it was the end of an era. Even though there are stores still that exist, it struck me that it was the end of an era in which that really largely was the focus of many of our lives. That this is how we spent our weekends. We would go to the video store, and that it had just been wiped away. And you know, it seemed to go away as fast as it came. I mean, you can really, in the book, I mark it as from 1980 to 2005, when the reign of the video store era existed. But you know, it lingered on till today. But it really struck me that it was quite a phenomenon that meant so much to so many of us. And I read a lot of about people being upset about it. I heard stuff from journalists. And I started thinking, well, what about the filmmakers themselves? How do they feel about the era that influenced them? I mean, the obvious ones that come to mind are Kevin Smith and Quentin Tarantino. But as I soon found out, there are a lot of filmmakers who really came of age during that era and who really, you know, I guess as the title implies, they lost it at the video store, and it's where they were creatively and financially, you know, found their careers.
I love that it's an oral history, especially that some of the comments seem to be directly commenting on some of the others. Was that kind of a happenstance, or were you showing some of the quotes of one director to another?
I'm very interested in the narrative, in telling the story. So I didn't want this to be, you know, chock-a-block. And I was hoping this would be the case, and I found it to be true, that a lot of the experiences were shared amongst seemingly very disparate different filmmakers. I mean, I was surprised by some things. Like, I had no idea that David O. Russell was interested in horror, or that he had gotten his start writing a script, a horror script. But, you know, you can connect David O. Russell to Darren Aronofsky, to John Sayles, and I was finding that to be true in my interviews, and so it became sort of easy to weave these guys together. But then, yeah, sometimes when I found interesting subjects coming up, I would pose what one filmmaker would say to another filmmaker. Can we talk about a specific?
Well, for me, I saw a lot of Kevin Smith commenting on Quentin Tarantino.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, he loves the guy. You know, I think we see a lot about Kevin Smith showing his appreciation of Tarantino and showing how much Tarantino influenced him. And I think, as we all know, Tarantino doesn't hold back from his opinions. And I let him, lay in on some other filmmakers in his own way. I mean, I think it's all in a respectful way, But it shows that these guys, you know, I mean, it's like a video store. People would argue, you know, people would argue about stuff. And that's what we love about, you know, movie culture.
Well, I like that you really called out, like, Sex Lies and Videotape was one, Reservoir Dogs was another, and Clerks was a third, really kind of calling those movies out as far as them being important or influenced by or influencing video store culture.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Those three films were huge. I mean, especially Sex Lies and Reservoir Dogs. And also Allison Anders' Gas Through Lodging and One False Move by Carl Franklin. Those movies, they were creatively, you know, very important. But I think what I discovered in the reporting and what I was really interested in was the financial impact, that the video stores were showing that they could make revenue from these indie films. And so suddenly small filmmakers like, you know, Spike Lee had a way to get financing, because, you know, producers and financiers realized that they were going to get a back end through the ancillary profits from the video store.
It really brought to the fore the whole idea of browsing too. You know, the thing that we've lost over the last few years is this whole idea of going into a physical location and being able to just look at the shelves, be it books or comic books or movies or whatever, and especially in this case, video cassettes or DVD covers, and having those be the thing that catches our eyes, or having those be the thing that inform us, and you're able to kind of get your, I don't know, your pedigree of films via those video covers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it seems like a lifetime away, but there was a whole world before IMDb and Google, and you know, do you remember video books? You know, like Roger Ebert's Video Companion, you know, Video Hound, these books that, I mean, I and so many other people would, you know, cherish on our shelves, and we would look up and see what the critics and the authors of those books would recommend, and then we would take them to the video store and browse and try to discover, you know, like an example in the book is Joe Swanberg, when he heard of these guys, the Coen brothers. They made one movie, and then he was like going through the shelves, and he found that they made another movie, and it was like, oh my God, these guys are great. And, you know, they don't make movies just like Spielberg. Spielberg, you know, deserves his credit, but they're people who are different from the mainstream, and you could discover that at the video store, especially if it was curated well.
Yeah, the whole idea of a pre-buzz for movies was so different back then than it is today. And as far as there was that whole idea of movies just kind of sneaking out rather than having, you know, the Facebook posts or the Twitter accounts for the films. And so it was just it was interesting that he didn't know that there were other Coen Brothers films out there.
Right. Yeah. It's true. And, you know, you think about the culture. I mean, I don't know, Mike, if you, you know, experienced this yourself, but I had my entire room as a teenager was filled with movie posters. And going to a video store in Manhattan was all about just being hit with all these images. Right? The posters in the video stores were so cool. And how I, you know, in many ways would learn about, you know, different filmmakers. You know, maybe it's superficial, but like that Down by Law poster of those guys in black and white, you know, I wanted to watch that movie.
Now, were you a Kim's Video addict when you were a kid?
I can't admit to that. I wish I were. I did revere it. I grew up on the Upper West Side, so I was a little farther away from downtown. But when I moved downtown, I would go frequently, and yes, I loved it. It became even more important to me when I became an editor, a movie editor, and a journalist who would cover movies. And I would go there often to get, you know, hard to get stuff. A lot of my experience, I would go to Blockbusters when I was a teenager. But one of the video stores that I just loved was actually up in Vermont. This small store run by this artist dude who just, you know, he knew what to stock. And that's where I discovered Scorsese, and that's where I discovered the Coen Brothers myself.
I love that there's a fairly wide range of ages when it comes to your interview subjects, but they all do share those common stories like you're talking about, because we all experienced it at the same time. No matter what age we were experiencing the newness of VHS and DVD at the same time.
Yeah, I pinpointed, I try to say that Generation X, people who were born from, what is it, from 1962 to 1980, were probably the most, the sweet spot for the video store era. But it preceded that to people like John Sayles. It came after that for people like Joe Swanberg and Alex Ross Perry. There's a wide swath of people, film fans, cinephiles, who just made the video store their cultural hub for a really long time.
Now, when it came to the actual writing of the book, did you kind of write up your wish list and then kind of go from there? Or how did it happen that you got the people that you got when it came to this oral history?
It was hard. It's not easy getting directors, but it worked out. And it's largely because these guys took the time, because they really connect. They really identify with the video store, and it meant a lot to them. So it became sort of a symbiotic thing. There were the people I went after, and then there were the ones who let me in because it meant, it meant so much to them.
And how long was the process of collecting all of these memories?
It took me about 3 months to report it out, and then I wrote it for about 2 months after that. I was writing during the entire period, but also I was reporting it during the entire period. But overall, it took me about 5-6 months, I would say.
What was kind of the impetus for you? Was it that closing of Kim's that you have as an appendix at the back?
No, when I went to Kim's to report for the New York Times on the closing of the last Kim's, that was actually after I started working on the book. I started working on the book soon after the last closing of the Blockbusters, when there were a lot of articles out there. These sort of epitaphs of the video store. People were saying it's the death of Blockbuster, at the end of the video store era. And I was reading journalists and, video store people talking about it. And I thought to myself, what about the filmmakers? What do they have to say about this?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm glad that you asked it, because it is something, it brought up so many interesting questions as I was reading it, that it, just that whole idea of the idea of streaming now and what that how that has changed us.
Yeah, I mean, you hear a wide spectrum when it comes to the streaming and where we're at now in terms of what's happening after the video store era. You've got everyone from Tarantino, who hates streaming, he doesn't stream. He's got this vast collection of DVDs and VHS tapes, largely because of he bought out the store that he used to work at, Video Archives, when they closed down. But then you've got a lot of, in fact, you have most filmmakers who are more optimistic and feel good about streaming. They're just looking forward to the day when you can get everything and anything. And also there is better curation. Right now, obviously we're all frustrated sometimes when we go on our Netflix and we look through and we can't find what we want to watch that night to stream. But, most of the filmmakers are hopeful about where things are going.
Well, and the other thing that you brought up that I never really thought about, but was a great point, was the whole idea of you walk into the store with one idea and you walk out with something else. And it's a great way to kind of turn yourself on to different things that you might not have ever looked for before.
I mean, that's what we all experienced, right? And then to hear Joe Swanberg say the same thing, where he wanted to turn over 150 different titles before he figured out what he wanted to watch that night. It's just awesome. It's a process of discovery. It's, you think about, some kid going down to a river and turning over some rocks and finding a salamander. That's what film fans did. We would go into video stores and we would discover. Right now, you go to your Netflix queue and you if you try to find what you want, and there's some discovery process. There's some tooling around through the website, but it's very different than when you have the tactile nature of being in a store, and you also have people having conversations, and you have a TV set above you that's broadcasting some film, and it's affecting you in a very different way. It's the real world. impact rather than the digital at home looking at a computer way.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the curation and that whole idea. I think you have a picture in the book of the employee recommendation shelf, which was such an important part for so many video stores, especially once you started to learn the tastes of the people that work there and how they lined up with yours.
Yeah, I mean, the employee staff picks, who didn't look at them? I mean, I think we all would look at them, even if it was to criticize them. We wanted to see, you know, what that knucklehead had, you know, put up on that shelf, on his shelf, you know, that week. But it was, you know, person-to-person recommendations that just don't exist anymore. What I personally was really excited to hear, during the interview process, was to hear how Tarantino himself would recommend films. I mean, I was like a little kid when I was listening to hear him talk about how he would recommend Eric Romer movies to people. You know, and I wish you could hear his voice. You know, just his, you know, the way he speaks, and you know, just the way he would say, you know, do you know, and you know, you might want to enjoy one of his Eric Romer movies, and you know, it's funny. It's not like going to make you laugh, but it's amusing. You know, just in that Tarantino way. And so, just imagine being this person in Manhattan Beach, you know, being in the glow of this, you know, nerdy film geek telling you, you know, about the latest movies. I mean, how awesome must that have been?
To say, oh, I watched that movie, Tarantino recommended it to me.
Well, yeah, after the fact, I mean, all those people, I'm sure people have been dining out on that and will dine out that until the day they die, you know.
So where's the best place for people to get the book?
Hopefully you'll find it at a bookstore near you. It's also on the Critical Press website. And also it's on Amazon, and it's on, there's a real, you know, it's the hardcover tactile thing you can touch. And there's also going to be a digital version that you can download to your device if you want, if you will.
And where can people keep up with you?
We have a Facebook page. So yes, it would be great if people checked out and gave us likes on the Facebook page at I Lost It at the Video Store. And I'm on Twitter as Doc Soupman. That's DOC Soupman, all one word, because I write about documentaries a lot. And I do appreciate the interest.
Are you a big soup fan?
I'm not a huge soup fan. Whenever I go to places, I never get the soup. But it was just a play on Duck Soup and Doc Soup. And it stuck.
Okay. All right. Hey, can you tell me about getting a tattoo with Angelina Jolie?
Yeah, sure. It was one of my early stories for Premiere, actually, and it was quite awesome. I was in Montreal. She was making that forgettable film, The Bone Collector. And what I'd like to do when I was profiling people was I'd like to do something special, not just, you know, have a conversation in a restaurant. I like to do fun things. So, like, I took the Hobbits from Lord of the Rings, we did laser tag. So I was having lunch with Angelina Jolie at a hotel in Montreal, and I said, let's just do something crazy. And my idea was to go to a bug museum, because I thought, you know, she's into bugs and spiders. And she was like, you know what? No, let's go get a piercing. And I was like, whoa, I don't know if I want to do that. But, you know, she's famous for getting her tattoos. So we agreed on the tattoo, and sure enough, she got one, and so did I.
Very cool. What'd you get?
Just kind of a weird, I guess it looks like a Samoan something or other. It's kind of abstract. It's just a little thing that I put on my hip. And she said, you know, once you get one, you're going to get, you'll never stop. And the truth is, it's the only one I ever got. I ain't crazy like that.
Tom, thank you so much for your time today. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
Great talking to you, and I appreciate that. I mean, I do feel like you guys clearly talk the talk and walk the walk in terms of this, you know, cinephile fan-loving thing that I think is in the book. So I'm excited to be on the podcast.
I'm sitting all alone in front of my TV, watching everything to my eyeballs fail to see. Me.